It's Johanna Masca, and this week on Press Advance, we're talking about national security, the security in the Middle East, President Trump's legal challenges and rumors swirling about his VP pick, and lastly, abortion access in Arizona and how this will shake out before November. We have a great panel to break it down. Joining me today is President Biden's former National Security Council spokesman, Adam Hodge, and former GOP Nevada State Party Chair, Amy Tarkanian. Press Advance producer Christine Baratta, a longtime Bloomberg journalist, is also joining us. So welcome, you all. Thrilled to have you here.
It's great to be with you.
Thanks for having me.
We have a lot to talk about. It's a busy news week, as always, but let's get right in. This weekend, Adam, the U.S. defended Israel from the first direct attack from Iran. And I'll say, you know, most of my friends who don't pay attention to the news every day didn't hear about it until Monday, which I think is a good thing. That means something worked. But you tell me, what did you make of this weekend?
I think what you've heard from the White House, from Israel, from our other allies and partners in the region, is that there's no question this was a success. I think there are two points in particular of why, like, that the president and Israel saw the outcome that they did. After October 7th, there was a massive deployment of American presence into the Eastern Mediterranean to try to prevent this type of regional conflict from spiraling out of control. And many of those forces, whether it's battleships and missile defense, were instrumental in stopping the over 300 missiles launched from Iran and its proxies in the Middle East in Israel. I think it also speaks to the incredible coordination that you had: the United Kingdom, France, Jordan, even Saudi Arabia stepped in to try to prevent some of these missiles from going over their own sovereign territory. And that speaks to, again, I think, the leadership from the Biden administration, from the president, from his team at the White House, to help try to prevent this from becoming a real regional conflict.
Yeah. Amy, I'm hearing a lot from Republicans saying Biden isn't going far enough because he's saying, you know, now he doesn't want Israel to again engage Iran. Just to be clear, Iran is saying that they're attacking Israel after Israel attacked and killed one of Iran's in Syria. The U.S. is in a very precarious spot here, right? We can't be in the situation in which you have Saudi and Jordan engaging in a direct attack back from Israel. So I'm just trying to understand, what do Republicans want Biden to do here?
Well, I think, unfortunately, you have mixed messaging that's taking place, because President Biden does have a re-election campaign that he's working on, and you have some very angry individuals who live in states like Michigan, where there's a heavier Muslim Palestinian American presence, and they want a ceasefire. So he's really walking a fine line by trying to appease that particular voting bloc while he's still trying to remain allies and do what the United States should be doing for Israel. And so when you hear the mixed messaging, I think that's where Republicans get frustrated, because it does seem that, you know, it's confusing. Is he actually wanting to remain allies and stand firm with Israel? Or is he kowtowing and caving in to the far progressive left, who's threatening to vote none of the above in this upcoming election? And I do believe that Biden, in the hardest of hearts, actually wants to see Israel succeed. And when you have his spokespeople go out, I think it benefits him. I wish that the White House had a stronger message, such as, like, Senator Coons, who's a Democrat, Senator Fetterman, who's also a Democrat. Those two gentlemen right there, I think, do an excellent job at explaining and breaking down in great detail where we are, why we are, and what the goal is. And that's something that I wish the White House would actually try to copy.
I think the NSC spokesperson, John Kirby, who, Adam, you worked with, is one of the best spokespeople for the White House. I think he comes out with patience, with grace, and in a service mentality. Fetterman, of course, this weekend did come out. He's criticizing President Biden, Adam, which, you know, obviously there are I think it's probably good when Democrats can criticize each other and Republicans can criticize each other. And that doesn't always happen in, you know, certain political sectors. But I don't know how you think they handled the calm side. I know, Christine, you've got a clip that they released this weekend from the White House, essentially shoring up confidence in their response to this attack.
Hey, you guys are the best in the whole damn world, man. Whole world. No, that's not hyperbole, man. Both these squadrons, you're incredible, absolutely incredible. You made an enormous difference, potentially saving a lot of lives. And thanks to extraordinary skill, the United States helped Israel take down nearly all those incoming missiles. You're remarkable,
Mr. President. We thank you for your words. This is Lieutenant Colonel Curtis Culver, 494th Fighter Squadron Commander, and we're mighty proud to have our part in that contribution, sir.
You're just incredible. I apologize for my enthusiasm.
So I just want to point out that the enthusiasm that Joe Biden mentioned, I'm not sure I heard a difference in his voice. I don't know what you guys think, but he sounded pretty much the same to me.
Adam, what do you make of that? You've been around the president a lot.
Yeah, but you got the president at the beginning saying he's just damn proud of his troops. That's a great moment. That's a great soundbite. That, and I say, like, just to put a little bit more crass political spin on it, that's also the president playing across the board to even some of the independent voters will see that and say, like, that's what you want in a president who's proud of his troops for doing an effective job, helping to save lives. I don't think you can underestimate just how massive of an operation this was.
I agree with Christine on that clip. Yes, his enthusiasm was quite underwhelming. But I do also agree with Adam that I think the words were the most important. And I think if the White House were smart, they would send that clip also to every television station and make sure that everyone caught that, whether if they were watching news before they went to work or coming home from work, but make sure that everyone caught that clip because he does, once again, I know that I'd mentioned his reelection dealing with pro-Palestinian Americans wanting the ceasefire, but now he has the other side that he had angered in that aspect. So now he has to bring back the voting bloc that typically does vote Democrat, and that's the Israeli Americans. And I know a number of progressive Israeli Americans that were very upset with him discussing Netanyahu, telling him that, you know, he needed to do one thing or another, trying to make sure that he was kind of the one behind the driver's wheel, if you will, and saying that maybe we should discuss a ceasefire to some extent. And I know that Israeli Americans were so fed up that they said, you know, we're either going to go vote third party or I may hold my nose and vote for Trump because I'm that angry. So it would be wise if the White House would release that tape nationwide all day, every day, because it's important to show that Biden is very patriotic and very proud.
The one thing that was saddest to me this weekend was I saw Tim Kennedy say, Iran is about to find out why Americans don't have universal health care. And I guess we should, you know, credit. We have fantastic defense. We take for granted our fantastic defense. Maybe we could have both health care and defense. That would probably be better for Americans. I want to move to Trump. You know, I remember I was on News Nation at one point and they were saying, you know, Biden's at a fundraiser and Trump is at a, you know, funeral for a police officer. Isn't that, you know, showing their priorities? And I said, you know, you're going to see different people with different activities on their agenda throughout this entire thing. You're going to see some people in court while you have, you know, a president leading. And I think we're seeing that this week. Obviously, you know, while President Biden has been hosting a number of people at the White House, we've got Trump on trial. Christine, I think you've got some comments of what he said when he came out from his trial.
This is Donald Trump on the first day of the trial, and he is talking to the media saying that it is an assault on America.
There is no case, and they've said it. People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country.
you know, comparing his legal troubles for paying hush money to someone who he had a sexual affair with, saying that that's an assault on America, I think undermines our security. But Amy, I'm curious your take.
Well, he's the king of basically capitalizing off of being the victim. And when he makes these statements, it's basically to stir emotions with his base. And he'll then further that and fundraise with his massive email list. And then he'll take to Truth Social and, you know, further his complaints and his moaning and groaning and his attacks, where he doesn't even think twice about crossing the line for a gag order that's already been issued. And so he's someone who definitely likes to push the limit to the fullest extent. And he takes, you know, the inch that you give him, then he'll go a mile after every time he's exiting a courtroom to address every single camera. So that way he can put out his 2 cents and make sure that he still has the devoted MAGA base in his back pocket.
This is the problem, right? Like, we've got Republicans, Amy, some don't consider themselves MAGA Republicans because MAGA is a little bit kind of nuts. Some people don't consider themselves, you know, crazy liberal either. And they feel like some things have gone a little too far. And so now, you know, you've got Donald Trump, who is squarely MAGA. You know, he is using this oxygen of this trial. I've said for a while, I don't think women are going to support him. But then we saw Katie Britt. Obviously, you know, she's had her own history in some challenging positions with her response to the State of the Union.
Look at what we're seeing. This is the left continuing to melt down over Donald Trump. They are obsessed. I mean, there is a reason both the federal prosecutors and state prosecutors said we are not going to move forward with this. And then you have Alvin Bragg enter into the arena and want to make a name for himself. People know that. People are sick of the two-tiered system of justice that we're seeing. And I think that the more the media can talk about this, which we're going to see them do, then the less they have to talk about what a disaster this country is under Joe Biden.
Amy, do you think this draws women who are skeptical of Trump back into the Trump orbit?
No. And Nevada is the perfect example, because if you look at our party registration, third party has actually skyrocketed and it's in first place. Nonpartisans and independents are way far ahead. And then you have second place Democrats, and then trailing in a distant third are Republicans. So I think that the message is going to have to cater towards these nonpartisan and independents. And I just don't see that happening, especially with somebody like Katie Britt. Her response, if she wants to talk about something being a disaster, her response was a disaster. And the fact that she allowed the men to place her in a kitchen, I was mortified. I was embarrassed. You know, am I proud to be a wife and a mother? Of course. But you had another Republican senator who basically said, oh, well, she has a different view of things because she's a housewife. Sorry, she's also one of your co-workers. She's a senator herself. So he minimized her title. And I found that to be pretty disgusting. And she didn't speak up for herself in those regards. And that was disappointing as a woman to see somebody who had such potential in that moment just completely lose it.
That's what I've been so confused about is, you know, there were Republicans who I admired were saying are the next gen, the next wave. And one after another, they've fallen in line after Donald Trump and his crazy talking points, whether they're talking about those who stormed our Capitol with a noose and Confederate flags as victims and hostages. It does not make sense to me at all. Adam, the White House just basically refused to even chime in on this trial. What do you make of their communications at this moment?
I mean, I think the White House is better placed leaving it up to the campaign to run amok. And boy, oh boy, did they have fun with Trump falling asleep in trial yesterday and using it and putting, you know, using the different, whether it was the Shaq meme, which I thought was particularly effective about, you know, Trump sleeps in the trial, but at night at 3 a.m., he's thinking about how he takes away your right to reproductive freedom. That is the contrast that they're going to keep driving. It's a smart strategy from the campaign. They can go, you know, really and try to fillet Donald Trump on this. But the thing I was also struck with, and why I think we haven't totally grasped just how powerful this trial of the president paying hush money to a porn star that he had an affair with is. In the New York Times poll that came out over the weekend, it showed that most of the country isn't paying attention to this. So many voters are going to actually hear about this for the first time. But when they ask the question, do you think the president committed serious crimes? A majority of Americans, I think it was 57%, said yes. So just as more voters are going to start tuning in to the election, they're going to be reminded of the fact that the president had an affair with a porn star and paid money to cover it up. And that's just, as people look at it, the least of his legal troubles over the next couple months. You've got the trial in Georgia where he's on tape clearly asking people to illegally find votes. And oh, by the way, he took some national security secrets, including nuclear codes, to Mar-a-Lago and had them staged in the bathroom. Those are all real legal jeopardy for the president that voters are going to hear about. Some for the first time, some will be remembered because they forgot about it. And I think that truly poses a real political problem for the former president in the election.
You know, when we were prepping for the show, I said to Johanna, and we're in the news business, so it's our job to pay attention to these things. We couldn't even remember what trials have happened, what trials are coming up. And I feel most Americans are just so busy with their own lives that they probably are not paying attention to any of this either.
I think the problem is because it's so overwhelming, we've become desensitized. So we just realize that he has a very full calendar filled with all type of indictments and in different cases at every corner. But the fact is, it's not even just about paying a porn star for infidelity, because let's be honest, how many very powerful individuals at every turn, whether if it be in Hollywood or politics, do the same thing. The problem is, and that's where I think a lot of his base is in understanding, is the paper trail, so to speak. So in the timing of it all. So, you know, he didn't want to come across as somebody who had an infidelity problem leading right up to the election because the Access Hollywood tapes came out. And so he tried to cover that up. And so he had Michael Cohen, who was his fixer at the time, who actually had to take a line of credit out on his home in order to make that payment to Stormy Daniels. And then not only did he have that, but he has a recording with Donald Trump discussing this very issue. And then right after the election took place, there is an actual ledger with his accounting books showing that the president had reimbursed him with a check. So these are all, you know, hard pieces of evidence that set aside the fact that he was messing around with a porn star. He has hard evidence of the timing of when all this took place. And that's where I think he's going to find himself in trouble.
God, it's just so sick on so many levels. And Adam, I remember when I was working with President Obama, I was so proud that he wasn't like that. Some people, you know, they try to say that Joe Biden is, you know, corrupt or anything like that. And we worked with President Biden. I didn't see that. I mean, you've worked with him more recently than I did. And I've got to believe, you know, we can do better than this in politics.
There's no question about it. I think that the Republican Party could do better than this. I mean, you compare the personal scandals between, you know, Joe Biden and the former President Trump. Joe Biden's biggest scandal, if you look at Fox News and some other channels, is that he likes too much vanilla ice cream.
He likes vanilla ice cream, and his son has serious troubles.
I'm talking about the two candidates. Hunter Biden is not on the ballot, as he may be in the court of public opinion, but the ballot will say Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. And I think that's where the Biden campaign feels like very strongly in that they're in a position to run on the president's, not only his record, but you're going to see them like make the character case between the president who's a leader, who's, you know, loves his kids, his grandkids, and another president who's a three-time divorcee who had an affair with a porn star.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to go into the Republican side, though, it's not just the fact that his son has issues and you can separate the two, but the concerns are the fact that there was money exchange between some of the business dealings amongst several members of the Biden family, where Hunter did happen to be involved to some extent. So that's where a lot of people have problems. And then, of course, you know, you do have some women who came out and alleged that Joe Biden had an inappropriate moment or relationship.
Well,
but hold on, though. It was alleged.
It was alleged.
So that I'm just putting that out there. I'm not saying, you know, nobody's perfect. And of course, when you are a high profile individual, you're going to have wackadoodles come out of the woodworks and claim certain things took place, whether if they were true or not true. And then, unfortunately, it comes with the territory. But I'm just repeating what Republicans say. Not all Republicans, some.
It's interesting, Amy, you bring it up, because Tara Reid, I remember when this came out, she accused Joe Biden of assaulting her. And I am a big believer in we should listen to any woman. And yet she went on Megyn Kelly. She said all this stuff. He was also like, this didn't happen. And now she's in Russia, which is super weird. I'm telling you, Donald Trump, there's an element of him that's like mob boss, where he literally picks these people off and has them do things. Now, Hunter is troubled, and I'm not going to say that he's not. I hope that he gets the help he needs.
No, and actually, I feel really bad for him. You know, my husband and I have had this discussion. You feel bad, and as a parent, you know, you do your darndest to try to help your child and you love them unconditionally. And that's quite honestly what I think President Biden has shown, is that, you know, he does love Hunter despite his massive flaws. And Hunter should be counting his blessings that he has a father like that.
There was all kinds of hearings into whether Joe Biden had any financial propriety, and it turned up absolutely nothing so far. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, and it is so interesting when you talk about troubled sons, because I have thought for a long time, RFK Jr. is very much like Hunter Biden. He's someone who had many problems with women. He had many problems with drugs. He admitted his problems with drugs. He got caught on planes with his problems with drugs. He had nefarious business dealings, including with Venezuela, because of his, you know, name. Now he's running on name only. I think we've already run this and had a politician at the helm who had zero experience and it didn't work. But RFK Jr., Amy, you were talking earlier about independents being the largest growing block. Somehow he has caught wind with a small percentage of people, but enough people that now RFK Jr. is saying, and I don't know what to believe, anything he says, but he's saying that Trump allies asked him to join Donald Trump's ticket. One, what do we think of RFK Jr., period? And two, why would Trump allies think that he should be on the ticket? Amy, you go.
Well, I think for the background that you just laid out, this is probably the perfect opportunity for somebody such as he to throw his hat in the ring, because you have two individuals who, quite honestly, I would say the majority of Americans really don't want to see a rematch of. And so they are looking for another possibility. And I think we're now at a point where we realize everyone at the top is a hot mess to some degree. So you almost just kind of let things go to the wayside and just say, okay, well, where is this person mentally now? Is this person going to have Americans' best interests at heart? Are we going to get into another war? Is this somebody who's smart with the books economically? Is this somebody who can get us out of a possible recession? Is this somebody who's going to help me put food on the table? Is this somebody who's going to make me feel safe, make my kids feel safe when they go to school? And so I think we're now at a point where you're able to put people's backgrounds to the side. And so I know RFK Jr. has been to Nevada here a couple times, trying to sell himself to those third-party individuals. Is it going to work? I think he's probably going to get some of the vote. It'll be maybe a lower double-digit number, but he will get some because of the fact that people feel that they're on a deserted island and they don't belong to a party anymore. They don't see the Democrat Party as their home anymore. They don't see the Republican Party as the same as what it was when they grew up. So people are floundering.
Yeah. And the stakes are real. Arizona decided to, for whatever reason, in 1864, there was a complete abortion ban passed. Obviously, Roe v. Wade protected the right of women to make this decision up to viability. A lot of people, you know, have all sorts of thoughts of whether it was to viability or not. Now, because Roe v. Wade was overturned, which, of course, Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell are responsible for and are taking credit for, now it's a state's issue. And Trump is saying, it's a state's issue. Well, when it becomes a state's issue, the Arizona Republicans couldn't even overturn an 1864 abortion ban that bans all abortions, even in the case of rape and incest.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
It's unbelievable. Now, of course, there are activists who are trying to put this on the ballot to make sure that people can codify their reproductive rights. California is bracing for a surge of abortions, people coming to the state because it is supposed to take place. Of course, their governor, thankfully, they voted for a Democratic governor who has said that she is not going to enforce this law, even though it's going on the books. But it's just an absolute hot mess. And I cannot believe that Republicans could not even figure it out to overturn a Civil War era law.
So I'm a huge Kelly Clarkson fan, and I was on her social media checking out a clip she had on there with her and Hillary Clinton. And she had Hillary on as a guest for her show, which she never really has a political guest or gets political on the show. So everyone in the comments was dragging her for, you know, having Hillary on. But I think what happened in Arizona with what's going on with reproductive rights really, you know, woke her up to what's happening with our elected officials. And it really matters who you vote for, even on a local level. So let's listen to what she said.
What I'm hearing from everyone is that they're just exhausted and they feel powerless. And even if I do vote, what does it matter? Like, it's like, what does it matter? Well, that's why we're going back to 1864.
Right.
That's why it matters, exactly. You know, but it's like, what do we do about that? Because it's hard to preach at someone that you have to care about something. But at the same time, I feel like we're going to end up in some kind of, not to sound dramatic, but some kind of civil war over things that I feel like we shouldn't be divided on.
It is shocking that the Arizona would turn back to a law that existed before there were even a state. But I do think the raw political, just to unfortunately go there, is that this will, I think, give Joe Biden and Democrats, Rubén Gallego in the Senate race, a stronger hand at winning in November. You've seen the power of women and men stepping up to protect these important freedoms. And the Biden campaign has been very clear that of the three main issues they're talking about, it is the economy, it is freedom, reproductive freedom, freedom across the board. I thought it was smart that Vice President Harris, within a week of this ruling, was already in Arizona holding a campaign event. And she's been an incredible messenger and warrior for the Democratic Party and the president and their reelection campaign on this issue. In Kansas, Ohio, New York, special elections up and across the country, in Alabama, when they tried and they had the IVF ruling at their Supreme Court. This is an incredibly powerful issue, and Democrats are poised to capitalize on it.
Adam, you mentioned something that I think is really important. This is not just a women's issue. And
absolutely,
every time I feel like it's categorized as a women's issue, this is about family planning, when and how they're going to have a family. Because in many cases, if there is an abortion after 15 weeks, Amy, my heart goes out to anyone who's in the situation where they have a fetus that they know cannot survive outside of the womb. But in many cases, there's a doctor and her family making a decision on whether they're going to carry a fetus. And in Texas, we saw a woman who had a fetus that was not going to live. She's forced to now carry that fetus. This has to be bad for anyone to believe that elected leaders should be the one deciding this.
Sure. So I'm pro-life, but I very realistic and understand that there are people with opposing views. And pro-choice individuals, they're not going anywhere. So you might as well come to some kind of compromise and make sure that this is the safest procedure possible for individuals. And I think if you talk to most who think somewhat like myself, the compromise does hit at that 15-week mark. When Governor Ron DeSantis from Florida was still campaigning for the presidency, they passed a 6-week ban, which I thought was a massive mistake, even though I'm pro-life. And because I was thinking to myself, if you're going to try to reach the masses and you're supposed to be the voice and the representation for the masses, I understand the pro-life movement is, you know, a voice for the voiceless. I get that. But you're talking about at 6 weeks where, you know, I've had 4 children. You don't even get an ultrasound until you're around 10 to 12 weeks. So most women don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. So I thought that that was a big misstep on the DeSantis campaign's part. And then you mentioned Vice President Harris campaigning in Arizona. She was here in Nevada yesterday to do the very same. So in 1990, you had not once but twice a vote by the people to make abortion legal up to 24 weeks. And so now what they're working on is they are collecting signatures for a petition to enshrine it in our Nevada Constitution, because they are concerned that there very well may be a push for a national ban. But President Trump, once again, you know, he will say one thing at one time and another at another time. And so now that he's the nominee, he's actually on record as saying, you know, it'll be left up to the states, that there will not be a national ban, even though he's the one who takes the credit for, you know, overturning Roe v. Wade. So I think he's a wild card, and that's why people are concerned. They just don't know, what is he going to say tomorrow? So that's why they're taking these steps. And it's a smart one, actually, because it worked very well for the last election for the Democratic Party. And that's why I think you see they're pulling out this playbook, because it was a success and it tugged on people's emotions. And this is a particular issue where you will have, as a one vote issue, voter who will come out in droves for that on both sides.
Well, and if it was only about taxes, like this is the thing, is it's about control of your body. And that is one of the things that is very much on ballots in November. We're going to see it play out in Florida. We're going to see it play out in Arizona and probably other states, because there are states taking away people's freedoms, their own freedoms to make their reproductive decisions. Christine, I think you have one clip in which Hillary Clinton correctly points out some flaws in the man who evidently was behind this law in 1864.
The old law in Arizona is, you know, without exceptions. And, you know, as an aside, the man who wrote that law was married, I think, 4 times, and one of his wives was 12. 2 of his wives were 15.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Pretty
alarming.
Yeah. So we're going back to Civil War era laws, and I did not watch Civil War this weekend. I do know some friends who did watch it. I really don't think we need to be there. And so, you know, it's like, come on, you guys, we can make some common sense moves that are not this. Adam, last words.
Joanna, I'll just say, yeah, no, I think to that incredible young woman in Kentucky who decided to step up and share her voice and her story in an ad for Kentucky Governor Beshear, and by all accounts helped sway that election. And I think that is just one example of what you will hear and see throughout this presidential campaign. And for women, for men, suburban voters outside of Phoenix and Scottsdale, or outside, you know, in Clark County in Nevada, in, you know, the collar counties of Pennsylvania, Milwaukee, Chicago, Wisconsin, all across the country, they're going to see these incredibly moving images, and it's going to move them. I'm convinced. And I think that's why you see the campaign driving this like nothing else.
I agree with him. Once again, it was a successful playbook on the Democrats' part last election, and they're wise to bring it up again. And especially with the IVF situation that took place in one of the states, you know what you're getting yourself into. You know, when you're signing up for a procedure such as in vitro, that there is a very big possibility that there will be leftover sperm and eggs. And so, you know, what you do with them after, of course, they ask you, what would you like to do? Would you like to hold on to them and freeze them for eternity? Or would you like to just discard them? And so for these individuals to say that this is unacceptable, you signed up for it. So I think it was a very disingenuous argument to have and to bring up to try to dissuade couples from wanting to proceed in a situation like this if they do find it difficult to conceive. And once again, I think it's wise to leave it up to the states. And if Arizona does go that route, you did mention California is right next door and so is Nevada. And that's what's going to happen.
Which means rich women, rich families will have access to the procedure. But those who are barely getting by and can't leave the state will not. And it's my sincere hope that people do engage in this election, that they start learning a little bit more about our peace, our freedom that we too often take for granted, and that we can come together and respect, empower, include. Christine, any last thoughts before we wrap?
So I think the reproductive rights issue is going to probably be the one issue that will save the Democrats in November. Trump knows this. He knows it's a big problem for Republicans going forward. And I think the messaging has been bad and they know it. So I think this could be a turning point for Democrats to win in November.
That and the fact that Trump kind of oversaw an insurrection. Just minimal points.
So long ago, but yes.
That minor event.
Yeah, that minor event.
So we're going to try to press forward and try to figure out with the next gen leadership what we're going to do. But that's for, you know, weeks to come. I'm really grateful to both of you, Adam Hodge, for bringing your very recent experience with the Biden team, Amy Tarkanian, for bringing all of your knowledge of the GOP. We really, really are appreciative of you both. And I hope you have a wonderful week.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I really appreciated both Adam and Amy's perspectives on this podcast. Love having our team of bipartisan folks kind of break it all down. If you're enjoying this podcast, please, as you know, you can always follow the podcast. You can send me any thoughts you have at Johanna Masca. My thanks, as always, to the talented team at Situation Room Studios, led by producer Christine Baratta, who joined today, as you know.